Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Beautiful yet challenging words from Paul's letter to the Hebrews. It's, of course, a long weekend, and I figure we can kind of delve into the tough passages a little bit, since you're kind of the steadfast folks who actually show up on a beautiful Labor Day weekend. Let mutual love continue, show hospitality. I spent 5 years of my life in a so-called house of hospitality. I lived there. Now, many of you might ask, what the heck is a house of hospitality? And that would be understandable, because that term, house of hospitality, isn't exactly common Christian parlance in our modern Christian speak. But I would posit to you this morning that that term, house of hospitality, has deep and ancient roots going back to the source of our faith, indeed even to the teaching that we hear today. At the Council of Nicaea, the same church council that gave us the famed Nicene Creed, back in the year 325, it was declared that every region of the church, every place where the church is, should have a house of hospitality where travelers, the poor, the sick, and the dying, and anyone in need might find a place to rest. The house of hospitality that I lived in, it was in Toronto, was called Zacchaeus House, and we indeed took in anyone who needed a space. Newcomers and refugees, formerly homeless folks, students, people in transition. There were wheelers and dealers, really. There were saints and sinners, hosts and guests alike. We were a ragamuffin lot. It was beautiful. It was gritty. It was the most vulnerable I've ever been in my life. In the 5 years that I was there, there were countless parties. I got to DJ. I was kind of the dance DJ guy. There was a suicide, a kidnapping of a community member in Iraq, many, many, many mice, a baby that was born in the middle of the Eucharist on Christmas Eve, as the person ran in and said, the baby's been born, more than a few arrests for civil disobedience, lots of soup and pasta, and most of it very tasty. Most nights, we never knew who was coming for dinner, whether there'd be two there or whether there would be 30, but there was always enough food, sometimes with the help of throwing on a little extra rice or pasta. There were times where we were close to losing the heat or the phone, and then mysteriously a check would come. I remember that we were trying to figure out how we were going to do Thanksgiving dinner when, strangely, a mysterious monk who we never met or saw again dropped off a few turkeys. For practical reasons, we were a dry house. We had no alcohol. And I'll never forget the meal where the Trinidadian charismatic Catholic decided to sneak rum into the punch. But that's a story for another day. For the early church and for the ancient world more generally, hospitality was part of the culture, and in many places it still is. For travelers in the ancient Middle East, where safety from the elements of nature or from theft was not guaranteed, a safe place to lay one's head, to be fed, could be a matter of life and death. Recommendation letters were common in those days to prove that this was actually a person of good faith, not somebody who was to take advantage of you. But interestingly, Christians early on were required to accept strangers even without such a letter. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, St. Paul says in his letter that we just heard read. The emphasis not being on show hospitality to friends or family or the people you trust or know, but to strangers. In early Christian teaching, each household was instructed to have a cup of water, a place to sleep, and some dried bread that could be available when uninvited angels came to stay. In our day and age, and in many parts of our more guarded and individual culture, this seems countercultural, perhaps even impossible or dangerous. When Mayor Lisa Helps suggested that folks in Victoria take in the homeless to alleviate the housing crisis, she was subsequently mocked or ignored. In 1933, in the midst of the Depression, a Roman Catholic laywoman by the name of Dorothy Day opened her first house of hospitality in New York City. It happened actually by mistake. She started a paper, and she started writing in the paper about the call to personal responsibility for those who are around us, to feed and to house and to care for those who are in need. And you can imagine in the midst of the Depression, it was a big call. But unfortunately for her aunt, where she was staying actually, people started to take her at face value. They read the paper and said, "You're talking about living hospitality." She had read these words from St. Paul. So they started showing up at her aunt's front door. Eventually she got kicked out of there and started Mary House and Joseph House, both of which still exist to this day. The Catholic worker movement runs grassroots, non-institutional houses of hospitality of various sizes and shapes around the world. I think there's about 250 or so of them to this day. The sermon that was given at Megan's and my wedding was about the difference between entertaining and hospitality. And I actually think that's a bit of what Jesus is getting at in today's parable and in his teaching that follows in the gospel. To entertain is to impress, to make friends. Let's make the big feast and set it out. Now, don't get me wrong. To entertain or even to be part of the hospitality industry, that's fine. That's okay work. But I don't think that's what Jesus is getting at today. He says, when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. So to make it even more difficult on this beautiful long weekend, so much of what Jesus writes about hospitality is about our hearts. It's about right intention. In today's gospel reading, Jesus is himself receiving hospitality from the Pharisees, from one of the Pharisees. And there's a cue right at the beginning of the text that makes it clear that this Pharisee's intention is not good. On one occasion, when Jesus was going to the house of a leader of the Pharisees to eat a meal on the Sabbath, they were watching him closely. We ran into that in last week's text with the religious leaders watching him heal on the Sabbath. There's a little bit cut out in that gospel section where he actually again heals on the Sabbath. So we get that line that I just read, and then the story about inviting people and taking the lowest spot. I can tell you from the experience of practicing hospitality that at the best of times, our intentions are always mixed. And I imagine that's true for any good work that we try and do as Christians. How much of it are we doing it for ourselves or to look good or to make ourselves feel good? And how much are we doing it out of surrender and to do God's work? Not that it's not good to feel good at the same time. Jesus is calling us to not just a simple act of opening our homes, which is hard enough, but to examine our hearts as to why we would do so. Not out of a need to be praised or to be lifted up as do-gooder saints. Dorothy Day, who founded that house of hospitality, said, "Don't call me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed that easily." She's actually being canonized in the Roman Catholic Church as a saint these days, so they didn't listen to her. Not to be lifted up as do-gooder saints, but to live cross-shaped lives of deep humility and surrender. Dorothy, she noted that the greatest challenge of the day is how to bring about a revolution of the heart, a revolution which will start with each one of us. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted, Jesus says. Tough words. Echoing that and speaking about Jesus' own life, Paul echoes these words in the famous kenotic hymn, the hymn of surrender, in his letter to the Philippians. Paul says, "Jesus humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God also highly exalted him and gave him the name that is above every name." That paradox that in surrender we are raised up, in crucifixion, resurrection happens. Commentators have noted that in our ancient creeds, not unlike the Apostles' Creed, which we'll do in just a few minutes, so much of Jesus' teaching and life are reduced to a comma. He suffered under Pontius Pilate, comma, was crucified, died, and was buried. But another commentator has gone on to say that perhaps all of that life and teaching, just like today's reading, are actually bound up in Jesus' actions of self-surrender, the downward mobility of his death, and in his resurrection, which are, of course, central pieces in our creeds. So the call today to take that lower seat at the banquet, to take the path of downward mobility, I don't think it's just good social advice, though it may be that, which is why it's included in Proverbs. I think it's nothing short of a cosmic invitation to enter the crucified and resurrected life of Jesus, to enter into the mystery of that profound and world-shaking and life-changing event. Dorothy Day, she said, the goal is to become that much smaller, not to start an institution, not even to start a revolution or to be remembered as a saint, but to seek the cross-like humility of what she called Holy Mother poverty. And to do so at personal cost, and yes, as hospitality implies, at a certain amount of personal risk. So yeah, happy Labor Day weekend. It sounds hard, and it is hard work. To practice true hospitality, as Jesus and Paul call us to do today, is the stuff of beauty, but also the stuff of terror. Dorothy Day used to love to quote Dostoevsky by saying, love in practice is a harsh and dangerous thing compared to love in dreams. I think probably even if we don't get that on that level of the kind of hospitality she did, probably most of us in our personal relationships have an element that love in practice is a harsh and difficult thing compared to love in dreams. It's hard, hard work to love. But she also said that the world will be saved by beauty, again quoting Dostoevsky. She was a big Dostoevsky fan. Practice mutual love. How great a love that is. A place of grace where that table levels us all, where we don't have the pressure of entertaining or of getting to the highest seat at the table and wearing the right clothes, but we live by practicing mutual love, where hosts and guests alike are recipients of God's mercy and God's grace, where each and every one of us at that table is probably there with mixed intentions, where no matter how much we deserve, we are radically welcomed. In fact, the less we deserve, the more we're welcome. And the lower the seat we take, the better off we become. What a strange and powerful paradox of the Christian life. And yes, to live this way, just like my years in the Catholic Worker demonstrated, will be messy. Blessed and broken, like the meal that we share here on a Sunday morning. A friend of mine who was kidnapped in Iraq for a year or so likened it to living on the edge of an iceberg. Not exactly fun, but oh, so imbued with grace and beauty. It is, after all, God's grace which allows it to happen, which allows us to live differently. And the mystery of it all is incredible if we can find the heart to take the risk. So, if you're feeling overwhelmed by all of that, it's important to note that it's not all on your shoulders. It's not our work. Our letter from Hebrews today ends like this. For Jesus has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can anyone do to me? I speak from experience when I say, to live the imperfect way of radical hospitality is rich, but it's also filled with hardness and grittiness. But it is the way of life. It is a foretaste of God's fulfilled reign. It's no wonder that so many of Jesus' parables of God's reign take place around tables with people who just shouldn't be there, probably like you and me this morning. I encourage us all to consider what it means to risk such a revolution of the heart, to practice hospitality, perhaps at least as much as we entertain our friends, to examine our intentions as to why we're doing so, and to welcome the stranger into our homes, just as we welcome Christ into our hearts. Above all, to live in mutual love, like the love that Jesus showed us at the cross. Only then will we become aware of God's grace in it all. Only then will the world begin to be saved by beauty. Amen.